Hello and welcome to the Unplayable Podcast. On this episode, Australia's men's Ashes squad has been announced, and we're lucky enough to chat to Chairman of Selectors George Bailey to run us through the selections. My name is Josh Schonefinger, and normally I'm joined by Louis Cameron, but today I'm joined by cricket.com.au journalist Martin Smith. Welcome, Martin.
Thanks, Josh. I can't help but feel this is a bit of a step down in terms of cricket ability with iconic Victorian fast bowler Louis Cameron no longer on the podcast, so I definitely don't have as much cricket experience. I did notice that Louis picked the West Indies to win the T20 World Cup, though, so hopefully my analysis is at least not worse than that. I think I can cover that off.
That's right. Don't sell yourself too short. Just before we get into our chat with George Bailey, I'll run you through the 15-man squad that they've selected for the first two tests against England. Obviously, the captain is Tim Payne. He'll take the gloves. The batters are David Warner, Marcus Harris, Manus Labuschagne, Steve Smith, Usman Khawaja, Travis Head and Cameron Green. They've gone with seven bowlers in the squad as well. Patrick Cummins is vice-captain, Josh Hazlewood, Mitchell Starc, Michael Nisa, Jai Richardson, and then two spinners in Nathan Lyon and Mitch Swepson. So they're the 15 that they'll take to the Brisbane Test and to Adelaide. And this is what George Bailey had to say about it all.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. The urn was regained. Redemption is complete. Australia have beaten England by 5-0.
So, George, before we get into the serious business of the Ashes squad that you've picked today, you are known as the whitewash wizard. Obviously, in your playing career, 5 Ashes tests played, 5 Ashes wins, never played again, 100% record. Does that legacy go on the line this summer with another Ashes series when you're involved in the national team again, or is it just cut it off, always the whitewash wizard from your playing days?
Nah, look, you can't change that, can you? You can't go back and erase that. So, it's one of the challenging things being the in this role now is that when the players do lose a test, it's very hard to understand what they're going through. I haven't experienced that emotion. It's very hard to be empathetic.
Very tough being the wizard, George, but that's just part of it. So the squad you've picked today, you picked a 15-man Ashes squad, 11 Australia A. Was it a difficult squad to pick, or did it pick itself based on a lot of the form the guys have been shown early in the Shield season?
No, there's always challenges. Yeah, I think at any given time there might be 60 to 90% that picks itself, but hopefully those last few spots are always challenging, and this was no different. There were a few spots that were really challenging. There's some good depth in a number of roles, and that's great to see too.
So, George, you've gone with the 15-man squad for this upcoming Ashes series, and normally in Australia, I guess, we're used to seeing smaller squad sizes, but can you just run us through why you've gone for the biggest size on this occasion?
Yeah, not sure if you've noticed, but this has just been it's been a bit of a challenge to get around the country of late, and there's been a few things going on there. It's looking like things are going to be a little easier this year in terms of how we get around and what the summer looks like. But we just want to make sure that we're in complete control of having the players that we want where we want them. And particularly given the fact that, wanting to announce the two squads today, but not quite having full access to information around how those guys have come back from the World Cup and how they're pulled up. So I guess out of, you've got 26 players there, but all that, a really vast range of preparation in terms of heading into an Ashes series.
So, George, we saw ahead of the 2019 Ashes in England, I know you weren't part of the group at that point, but they had that sort of selection shootout, Australia v Australia A down in Southampton, and then picked the squad after that. I think when it was announced a couple of weeks ago, there was going to be a 3-day game in Brisbane before the first test. There was a lot of, I guess, anticipation that was going to be a similar sort of scenario. You haven't gone down that path. You've picked your 15 that you're going to stick to for the first couple of tests. Did you think about having that similar scenario that you had a couple of years ago, or are you obviously happy just to back the guys that you've picked in the 15?
Oh, I think at times there's great merit to it. If it fits and it works, then you'd be mad not to see that effectively your strongest domestic players playing a hit out against each other would be a great test. And I think for a number of the players, we're only going to use it as a as a preparation tool, but I think still performances in it will be watched. So, you know, that I think that's important, but it just, again, given the range of and where people are at, that game is going to mean different things to different people. And it's not the first test, and there's no point having a huge hit out that cooks your players before you've got to the start line.
George, we saw your comments last week, I think, or a couple of weeks ago about Marcus Harris. You got right behind him and sort of backed in to have a long stint as David Warner's opening partner, starting with the first test. Was that an intentional strategy to really publicly get behind him, or were those quotes taken out of context a little bit? What was the thinking behind what you said about Marcus, and what are you expecting from him this summer?
Well, not so much a defence of him. I just think it's important that when you're feeling strongly about a player and you've got clarity on a player, that you let them know that. Again, it's a five match test series. You don't wherever possible, you don't need to make it a seven or eight match test series by leaving them in the dark. And the point around Harry was that his domestic form's been outstanding. You know, he's head and shoulders above those guys around him in that role. And the 10 tests he has played, they haven't come in a group. He's come in, he's been out. You tell me a batsman who wouldn't have learnt something on that tour of England. I think it was from both teams, some of the best displays of fast bowling that you've seen. I don't think any opening batsman particularly enjoyed the series. So all of those things are building a life experience and cricket experience for him. And he's a learner, and he's going. I love the fact that he chose to head across to England this winter and play for Leicester and had a really successful year for them. He's come back and he's scored 100 already in a pretty challenging, I think, start to the year for Victoria and New South Wales. It's not easy when you're seeing other states up and about and playing cricket around the country, and you're waiting for your opportunity. So the fact he did that, all gets me excited.
So it looks like Kawaj and Head will be battling it out for that number five spot. Were those two the standouts, or were there other contenders for that position?
No, I think we've actually got a little bit of depth in that role. I think Nick Maddison's in really great touch as well, continues to mature as a cricketer. The thing I've really liked about his cricket over the last little while is, we know he can take attacks apart. He's got the attacking game, but starting to see him really pick and choose when he does that. He's had some innings where he's had to graft it out. He's played on some challenging wickets. He's a terrific player of spin. Matt Renshaw in much the same boat, I reckon. He's obviously shifted from the top of the order into the middle order for Queensland, and he's looking great when he does it. I think his game's in really good order. He scored 100 a couple of weeks ago against Tasmania, and I thought that was a great blueprint of what it can be like at number five. I think he was in about the second ball of the second Newey, and then had to work his way through the second new ball, got his way to stumps, restarted the innings the next morning, and then took the game apart and scored 100. Again, a really good player of spin. So that's great to see. You know, Alex Carey's performance with the bat, you could almost argue that he puts his name up as an out-and-out batter as well. So, Heddy and Uz have been the guys that have been given the opportunity, but I'm really confident we've got some good contenders for that role going forward. I know a lot's been made of Mitch Marsh, and we know that he's another one who's batted in that number six role at test level and has done it with success. So we know he's got the game that can succeed there as well. So, you're starting to put together a decent bunch of players there.
And just on the World Cup, how satisfying was it to see it all play out with Australia winning their maiden men's T20 World Cup title?
Just overwhelming emotion was just happiness for the players in particular. I don't think people understand the difficulty in winning them. And you need to obviously play particularly good cricket. You need a lot of things to go your way as well. So I guess from my point of view, the whole process was really good. I think you go through that. We had our 15-man squad, and we were able to select from those guys right throughout the tournament. So our Triple SM, our physios, our strength and conditioning, our doc, they did a wonderful job to make sure that that come the pointy end of the tournament, we were able to be picking our best team, which, you know, you saw a number of other teams not with that ability. So that was huge. I think there's so many little nuances within the game itself. I think the coaching staff did particularly well to take complete control of their little areas and get the trust and the buy-in and the support of the players, give the support to the players. And that's probably the final bit. I thought the response after the English game, I thought Finchie galvanised that group and they doubled down on the way they wanted to play. They put their balls on the line in terms of wanting to be an aggressive team and to play, you know, if they were going to go down, they were going to go down playing the way that they wanted, and full credit to them. And I guess finally it's you know, tournament style play, and the art of it is to be playing your best cricket at the back end, and hats off to that entire group, because they were certain they were getting better and better as it went on.
George, just one last one on the Ashes squad. Obviously Michael Neeser's in there again, as he's been picked in most test squads for the last 3 years. He still hasn't played test cricket. He's got so close. He's been such a great contributor for Queensland. First of all, how is he fitness-wise? He's got a bit of a hamstring niggle. And secondly, are we going to see him get a game finally? He's been so close on so many occasions. Are we expecting to see Michael Neeser in a bag of green this summer?
Fully expect him to be fit come there. I think this one's quite a minor one, and more frustrating than anything for him. But he's in a pretty good place as well. New dad, so a couple of extra days of getting the hang of that will be good for him, I reckon. Yeah, he's almost a bit like the Andy Bickell, isn't he, of a different generation. He's right there, such a popular member around the group, and does everything right. Fingers crossed that at some stage, it's a catch-22, isn't it? Because it's you want him to get an opportunity, you don't necessarily want it to be at the expense of an injury or anything like that. But he does everything right. He still leads that Queensland attack with great distinction. I think everyone who's been around Ness and played with him and been with him on those Australian squads would love it to see him get an opportunity.
Thanks, George. Really appreciate you joining us on the Unplayable podcast today.
Thank you, gents.
22 runs off the over. Make that 28. Massive. And Michael Clarke's seen enough. George Bailey has pounded Jimmy Anderson for 28 runs off the over.
All right, so that was the chairman of selectors, George Bailey. Marty, do you reckon we're going to see that iconic pace trio of Stark, Cummins and Hazlewood be split up this summer at any point? Are we going to see Richardson, Neeser, or maybe another quick get a crack this summer?
I think everyone sort of learned a lesson from last summer with those three fast bowlers going through all four tests in a short space of time, and I think everyone could sort of see right at the end, with India batting for as long as they did, that those three guys, they were pretty cooked by right at the end of it. So I think there'll be a lesson learnt there. And George Bailey said that as well, that, you know, he did use that word, that cliche of squad mentality, but they do have a really good depth of fast bowlers. Obviously James Pattinson's not around anymore, but you've got Jai Richardson and Michael Neeser in that squad. You've also got Scott Boland, Sean Abbott, Mark Steckety's been had a great couple of years. So they have depth there. I think the interesting question is, when do they rotate? You know, is it a horses for courses? You know, when does all this happen? And who's the first in? I had a chat with Ricky Ponting earlier today, and he said it's Jai Richardson for him, who's the first man in.
Yeah, really?
So, again, poor old Michael Neeser. He's literally been around a test squad for the last 3 years. I think, as George said in that chat, he's almost turned into the Andy Bickell of the current era. But we'd all love to see him get a go. But, yeah, look, Ricky's point of view was that Jai, you know, we've seen what he can do. He's just had a lot of injuries, but he's got good pace. He's sort of that skiddy kind of bowler, so he is a bit different to the other guys and can swing it up front as well. And another one with both Neeser and Richardson's, they can bat too. They add plenty with the bat. But that'll be interesting. I think we'll see. I'd be very surprised if those three quicks play five tests in 6 weeks. It's just not possible, particularly on these flat Australian wickets. So Neeser, Richardson, I think they'll all come into consideration.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And another interesting point of contention will be the middle order. Number five, it appears, is down to Khawaja and Head. But as George Bailey said, there's also plenty of depth in that position as well. Which way do you think they're going to go in this position?
I'd be very surprised if Khawaja doesn't get a game. I think they've brought him back into the squad. I'd be very surprised, particularly given he is an experienced player. I'd be very surprised if they brought him back into the squad and didn't pick him. Yep. And certainly that was Ponting's point of view as well. I think Usman's record at the Gabba, number one, is fantastic. In Australia is also very good. George did make the point as well that he does offer that flexibility in the squad. Potentially as an opener, he can pretty much bat anywhere in the top six. But yeah, I'd be very surprised if Khawaja doesn't play that first test. But the interesting thing is the selectors haven't said either way which way they're going to go. And next week there is a Shield game, which is Queensland versus South Australia.
Yeah.
Khawaja versus Head, how much of a showdown that is, I don't know. It won't stop us talking it up as a bat off. But yeah, look, it'd be interesting. You know, if Khawaja gets a pair in that game and Travis Head gets a double hundred, then that sort of changes the conversation. But I'd imagine Khawaja would be the front runner at the moment. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see what that means for Head. He probably goes back and plays for Australia A and then tries to get in that way.
And no room for the World Cup heroes either, Mitchell Marsh or Matthew Wade. We were sort of expecting Wade because he wasn't in that squad for South Africa. But Marsh, on the weight of runs and confidence that he's now got, was definitely a chance you would have had to assume.
It's amazing. I reckon a week ago or even 4 or 5 days ago, you would have said he was no chance. But after that performance in the World Cup final, and I think it just reminded everyone what kind of form he's in. He's just in absolutely incredible form, and probably confidence-wise has never been better. So there's definitely a case to have him in. He's not in that 15, and George Bailey did say today that there won't be any changes to that 15 squad between now and the first two tests. So I guess that means that Marsh, he'll play that Australia A game just to get a bit of red ball cricket, go back to the Big Bash for the Perth Scorchers, probably bat at three where he's done so well, and then try and get into the team that way. Another thing Ricky Ponting did say today was that with the confidence Marsh had at the moment, he's got no issue with Marsh going from T20 cricket into Test cricket because he's just batting so well at the moment.
Okay.
I think Mitch Marsh, he did pull himself out of a Shield game a couple of months ago just before the World Cup because he did say, I don't want to complicate my thinking for the World Cup. I think he said quite offhand, but he said, I've pretty much just been practicing hitting sixes for the last 6 months, and he was obviously doing that really well. So I don't think he's thought about red ball cricket at all for a while. So, but I guess he's got that little window now just to sort of remind himself about his red ball technique and see how he goes. But yeah, no room for Mitch, but you know, who knows, he might get a role later in the summer, and obviously his bowling's a handy option as well.
And Marcus Harris is as good as locked in as David Warner's partner at the top of the order. It means that Will Pukowski, who we saw for just one test last summer, we probably won't see him at all this year. Chris Rogers said today that they won't see him in Victorian colours until probably at least February, given the schedule the Big Bash is going to come in. So it's a shame that we won't see Puck, but, I mean, he's still young enough. Let's hope that he's got time on his side.
I just feel so sorry for him because he's obviously, he's such a fantastic player. He's such a fantastic person. In the minimal dealings I've had with him, he's just you can't help but like him. I don't think everyone just wants him just to get healthy first of all, but he just deserves a crack at it, whether it's concussion or shoulder injuries or God knows what else. He just has had no luck, and unfortunately it just seems unlikely that he'll be able to play any cricket at all in the next little while apart from club cricket.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a Big Bash deal, not that you know that's necessarily the best preparation for an Ashes series, but yeah, with the way the season is, as you said, with that two-month gap with no Shield cricket, I think Rogers sort of indicated that he's not expecting to see him play for Victoria until February, obviously by which time the Ashes are done. So really sad and really disappointing. I'm sure Pukowski's crushed because he was really setting himself for this Ashes during the winter. But as we keep saying with him, he's 23. It feels like he's been around for so long. He should be in his 30s already, but he's got a long career ahead of him, and hopefully once he finally gets that chance, like Pat Cummins, who had so many injuries and now look at him go. So once he gets a decent run at it, I'm sure he'll be back, but it just won't happen this summer.
Do you think let's say that he gets himself cherry ripe in around early January, he wants some top level cricket, would he try and slot himself into a Big Bash team, or is that just not a priority for him at this point?
Well, it depends if there's room as well. I think he did have a contract with the Melbourne Stars last year and didn't play a game. But yeah, look, I guess that's possible. I think, yeah, there might be a bit of second 11 cricket as well, but it'd be basically just club cricket for Melbourne that he'd be playing, and whether you're able to come in off club cricket on suburban grounds and, you know, go and play a Boxing Day test, I think you'd have to be pretty doubtful. And both Chris Rogers and George Bailey said that today, that's pretty much not going to happen, and it's probably a step too far, which is a shame. But, there's probably more batting depth in form at the moment than a lot of people would have expected. Definitely 6 months ago, there was a bit of doom and gloom about Australia's batting, as there often is, but there's a number of contenders there, and the strength of that A team, I think, proves that as well.
Well, let's have a look at that A team. It was announced today as well. 11 players: Sean Abbott, Ashton Agar, Scott Boland, Alex Carey, Henry Hunt, Josh Inglis, Nick Maddison, Mitchell Marsh, Matthew Renshaw, Mark Steckety, and Bryce Straight. Now, they'll play a 3-day intra-squad match against the Australians. So, well, there might be a bit of mixing and matching there, you'd imagine. And then they'll play a 4-day match against the England Lions starting the day after the first test. So, unfortunately, we don't get the official Aussie versus Australia that we all wanted, but we do get a good look at some of the next in line for Australia.
Yeah, and George Bailey spoke about those guys today. There'll be a number of names there that you know, unless you follow the Sheffield Shield closer, you've probably never heard of Henry Hunt or Bryce Straight, but they're sort of those old school gritty opening batters who take the shine off the ball, probably have strike rates in the 30s, but that's okay. That's sometimes what you need as an opening batter. And another name that was brought up today was Matt Renshaw. I think a lot of people have forgotten about him. Obviously, 4 years ago, he was the incumbent test opener and then missed out just before the first test, and he hasn't been cited in national colours since, pretty much, although he did play one test
in South Africa.
Yeah, but we all try and forget about that one. But he's reinvented himself as a number five batter. And he scored 100 against Tasmania about 3 weeks ago that George Bailey mentioned in that chat, that was sort of the quintessential blueprint for how you want a middle order batter to play, because he's got skills against the new ball, obviously the second new ball, but obviously he's an opener in a past life. He's very tall and got a big reach and can play spin really well. Yeah. And I think we've seen in the Big Bash, he's got the ability to move through the gears probably more than he had when we first saw him in international cricket. So with a lot of test tours of Asia coming up next year, he's a name I think we need to watch out for. It'd be interesting to see how he goes for Australia A. And then at the start of next Shield season, who knows, he might even be a bolter for the test tour of Pakistan in March. But he's a name to watch. And I think Nick Maddison as well. I think everyone's seen how well he's done over the last little while, that if Khawaja, Travis Head, if they don't do the job, you've got Alex Carey as well. There's actually some decent options, I think, more than people actually realise, in terms of batting depth in Australian cricket at the moment.
Yeah, so Renshaw's averaged over 60 in the Shield since he's moved to the middle order, so certainly good signs there. And it's also given us a bit of a rubber-stamped approval that Carey and Inglis are the sort of two in vying for that Tim Payne role once Payne eventually decides to hang up the gloves, doesn't it?
Yeah, which could be soon. We don't know. I think there's a lot of people are assuming that Payne, this will probably be his last series, the Ashes, which means that we'll need a new captain and B, a new wicketkeeper.
Two pretty important positions, right?
In March, right? So that's coming up pretty soon. So, yeah, I think when the squad was named today, there weren't that many surprises, but I think at a sort of secondary level, there's a lot of little subplots going along that, guys like Carey and Inglis there, and, throw Josh Phillippe in there as well. Jimmy Pearson wasn't picked today, but that probably says more about Inglis and Carey than Pearson, because Pearson's had a great couple of years as well. So there's a lot of little subplots, but that's after the Ashes. We've got an Ashes series to get through first.
And it all kicks off in just a few weeks, so stay tuned to cricket.com.au for all your new scores, video highlights and Ashes previews, and of course plenty more Unplayable podcasts to come between now and then. Marty, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.